Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. The podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We're just here talking about rugby because we really love it. And what a weekend of rugby we've got to talk about. I'm so excited about this podcast. That's why I'm here in the Rugby Dungeon. I'm Tim with JB.
Talking about Downfall 2018! Welcome to the post-downfall era. Oh, how are we all feeling, boys?
You alright, Phil?
Oh, Tim, I share your lack of enthusiasm.
I've never known, like, JB being enthusiastic about... Who is this? Bruno Mars?
I've got no idea, mate.
JB being enthusiastic about Bruno Mars is a turn up for the books.
Oh, wow. Well, I never expected... I did expect the Ireland loss, but wow. Just wow. The whole thing, wow.
Yeah, wow indeed. Yes, we're going to have peak smugness from JB, and you know what? Deservedly so. Wallow in it, mate. I would.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, anyway, before we get into anyone wallowing, why don't we tell everyone where they can find us?
Yes, we're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. We are Egg Chasers Podcast on Instagram. We are on Facebook... Egg Chasers, just Egg Chasers, isn't it? /Egg Chasers.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And we're on Acast, iTunes, anywhere else you can get a podcast. Leave a review, not tell your mates. Also, I think we should just say what an incredible weekend it was last weekend.
Oh wow, I'm still not really recovered, truth be told. I tried to do my first bit of exercise on Thursday. Oh, it was painful. My legs. I don't know what I've done, but my legs are in bits.
I still haven't got the electrolytes back in my body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As you get older, it gets harder.
Yeah.
I was in the gym on Tuesday night and just cramping up.
Yeah.
And that's after 2 days of rehydrating as much as I possibly could.
Yeah.
Do you use that diarrhea stuff when you...
Dioralyte.
Dioralyte.
I used that for the when I ran the marathon and I felt incredible during and after. Like, I wasn't even sore the next day.
People rave about it.
I put it down to that, yeah.
Yeah, I have used it in the past. I've not used it for a while,
I don't
actually.
Know why I didn't think of that. That's perfect for for hangover.
You want it behind one of those glass cases with a tiny hammer.
you need 2 dozen of them behind the glass case, just in case.
But of course, well, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed last week's live podcast if you couldn't be with us. And I hope that it has inspired you to join us on the Tier 2 Tour 3, which we will do next year. But
not to Belgium.
incredible thanks to everybody that made the effort to be there. And I think everyone had a pretty amazing time.
Yeah, I hope so, at least.
We certainly did. We're blown away.
So I had a couple of conversations with some lads during the game. During the tour. And I was talking to them about, where should we do next? So obviously, you know, Germany sounds like it could be a likely destination. Belgium, obviously, are going to be...
Portugal, if they go up.
Portugal win. And these lads said something along the lines of, do not do Belgium. We went to Brussels and... five of us got mugged. A group of 15, five of us got mugged independently.
Big rugby lads.
Yeah. You know, proper people. And I went... I actually got mugged... Not mugged. I got pickpocketed in Madrid. Went to the shop in Manchester to replace my phone. The guy behind me had also lost his phone. Just come back from Brussels, where
nice.
We got mugged. It's like, yeah, okay, we're not doing Brussels. That is a sign.
Yeah.
I thought you were referring to Spain's painful... missing out on automatic qualification for the Rugby World Cup.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
We'll get into that in a little bit.
Yeah.
But this podcast should rightly start with...
The champions.
Just showering praise on Ireland's third ever Grand Slam.
Yeah, I thought they had more than that. But yeah. Exactly, they've got more championships than I think, if that makes sense.
Well, that does demonstrate how difficult it is to win 5 games.
Yeah. I suppose it also demonstrates how good this Ireland team is in historical contexts compared to old Ireland teams. They're legitimate.
Oh, absolutely. They've been comfortably the best team of the tournament from minute one to minute 80 of the final game. And they've never really been pushed.
No, they haven't.
They never looked.
Well, France.
The France game they did get pushed. Other than that, they haven't been at all.
Well, they did get pushed, but it was a poor Ireland performance on that day. I think to sort of slightly adjust what you said, Ireland have never had to reach the kind of performance that they showed in Chicago, for example, where they pulled out, a total world-class performance. They've won it. No, I won't say it a canter, but they've won it without shifting into the top gears. Definitely.
Yes.
There's more to come.
And Joe Schmidt's Ireland side have won three out of the last 5 years as well, which is remarkable.
That is a remarkable. I mean, everyone was talking about three in a row for England, and they managed it. They managed three in a row. It was just defeats.
The wrong for three in a row, eh?
But no, well played, Ireland. What's incredible is, well, there's a few things.
They are dull, though, aren't they? Can you agree with that? They are quite dull.
No.
I felt like in the same way Saracens are. I mean, I don't think it's a massive criticism. I love Saracens.
I thought you'd love their kind of brutal efficiency and the way they soak up pressure.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say about that is to love a team like that, you've got to watch them all the time and you've got to kind of get into it. They're not a team you can just sit down and watch and think, oh, that was brilliant. You've got to appreciate it.
They're not a Sale Sharks then?
No, God no. They're the best ball in hand team in the UK. No,
in the Northern Hemisphere.
Tell you what though, there was one move in absolute chaos and it looked like Ireland were going to do some sort of loopy thing. And they didn't, so they dummied the loop and someone came straight through the middle.
That was Furlong.
Stunning.
Yeah.
The Sexton loop around and Furlong did the lift to Aki, wasn't
it?
Yeah.
Yes,
awesome.
It was.
So good.
I was like, that is a team that have played together.
Oh, so good.
That was the CJ standard try.
Yes, it was.
When Aki went through, Ring Rose was on his outside and it looks like he's going to go for Ring Rose.
Yeah.
And he just pops it
inside. A tight head prop.
With the hands.
Top tackler in the game, I think. 20-something tackles.
Yeah, well... and going back to what you said about Ireland, they're dull and all the rest of it. Well,
they're efficient.
No, they are. But I would say they...
Maybe controlled is more the word.
Well, no, I think what I'm excited to see what they can do when they add Jordan Lama into the equation over the next few years. Because, I mean, one thing we've got to say is Rob Kearney has got to be given a lot of props. A lot of people were thinking, oh, he's had his day, he's done. Rory Best, exactly the same.
Yeah.
The influence of guys like that have been massive. But... I'm really excited to see what happens when Ringrose really is bedded in and when Lama is also in this side. Because at the moment, I think Ireland are great without actually having any game breakers.
Yeah, they're beating teams in third gear, it looks like.
Mm.
And that's what I loved about the All Blacks game is when they just, okay, let's play. And just everything was let loose. So it'll be interesting to see how good they can be when they just turn it loose.
I don't think they will turn... It'll be controlled...
No, they'll have to. The All Blacks in Chicago, I think, was that example of let's just go for it, boys.
But they didn't just go for it. They were clinical.
Their kicking game was immense.
And the pressure they put on. And the key for Chicago and the key for the England game was just how clinical they were.
Yeah.
That first half, they had three try-scoring opportunities. They scored them all. England, on the other hand, had try-scoring opportunities... Particularly in that second half, they had territory, they had possession, and they didn't seem to know what to do with it. Even when they scored the last try in the 82nd minute or whatever it was, they'd had the ball for a good 15 minutes in Ireland's territory, in Ireland's half, in Ireland's 22, and didn't seem to know what to do with it.
The only downside to this Ireland team is what happens if Johnny Sexton gets hurt. I mean, that to me is the real... the real problem for them. They're so dependent on him.
Well,
it'd be nice
then they'll have someone who can kick goals.
Oh, okay, yeah, fair.
His kicking's
same
been...
as England and Farrell and Chanduk. And there's been a lot of bad kicking.
No, there has been, actually. That's been a feature of the Six Nations, hasn't there?
Yeah. Sexton's kicking was better than Farrell's.
Mm.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about him in a second.
Mm.
So despite all that, I don't think that they're the most likely team from the Northern Hemisphere to win the World Cup.
So, interesting. Because I would say they comfortably are.
Well,
based,
they
based
are.
Based on the last two years of performances.
If it's played today, they are.
And also, so, their current Six Nations holders.
Yep.
They're unbeaten in 11 games,
yep.
Which makes them JB Cup holders.
That is exactly
they got,
right.
They got the Grand Slam, the Triple Crown.
That's why they take their risks.
Everything else.
They're the only side to have beaten every other Tier 1 side since the last World Cup.
Yep, they're amazing. They're amazing.
Yeah,
but they're not going to be the favourite. Well, they're not my favourites for the Northern Hemisphere team to go the furthest in the World Cup.
Okay, go on.
This is probably my favourite thing about the whole Six Nations. It's going to be France.
Interesting.
Now, I am convinced.
Tell me why.
They are back. They are back with it. I mean, the Wales game wasn't great. The England game wasn't great, but they're big and they're powerful and they're building and their talent is undeniable.
Their defence has been outstanding. Have they been the best defence in the Six Nations, France? I think they may have been. I think they've only conceded 6 tries in the whole tournament. Mm. Their defence is the real deal.
And the thing everyone talks about France is, oh, they'll tire. They're big blokes. They don't tire. I mean, they're led by, I know he wasn't playing this week, but what's Hugger's name?
It's Gerardo.
Gerardo. Who puts in, I don't know, 20-plus tackles almost religiously. Yeah, these guys don't tire, and they're massive, and they can overpower you. They can overpower anyone in the world, and that's saying something.
And if they'd have had a 10 that wasn't an absolute horror show that just shat the bed, they would have comfortably, well, not comfortably, they would have beaten Wales. Because there was a couple of dodgy decisions that really went against France. One penalty that Lee Halfpenny slotted, just like total head scratcher. Where did that come from? But more's the point. Machinot missed one just before half-time, and Tranduc right in front of the post.
Well,
what
just
are you doing?
Think about the raw materials. So we were talking about Tranduc and Boxy, so basically play sitters at the moment. They've got the young lad, I want to say Bellew, what's his name?
Yeah, Bellew, the Toulon boy.
And the other guy who was even younger again.
Matthew Jalibert.
Yeah, so...
I always read as jailbait.
Ah, jailbait. Yeah. Perfect. And then the scrum-offs. I mean... Anyone who plays in France will tell you that this DuPont fella is the real deal, and he's out. Then you've got Baptiste Serran, and then you've got the guys who are really good, like Morgan Parra and...
Maxime Machinode.
Machinode.
Who's been right up there, in my opinion, for best players of the tournament.
Yeah, he's been the best 9 in the world, or one of, for 5 years, and no one really talks about him.
I wouldn't make that statement, but he's been good.
I mean, they don't because France are so bad, but I mean, if you watch European rugby, there's no two ways about it.
The interesting thing for France now will be trying to integrate the players they've dropped back into that squad.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that, someone like Teddy Thomas, who was the best winger on the first two rounds.
Easy.
Stockers aside, because he's the best winger in the world.
Well, we can get into a team in the tournament later, but I think you'd be hard-pushed to find two better wingers than Stockers and Teddy Thomas, even on the basis
of two
games.
Well, going forward, at least.
But after the coach taking such a hard line... 2 games into the tournament, dropping 8 of his starting squad, how does he then integrate them back in without losing any credibility?
Well, do you know what? I think he's got his credibility because from what I understand from the incident, it's relatively minor. He's taken a hard line. Boundaries have been set.
And now there's a natural break, so you can start a fresh blank bit of paper.
I mean, I think, come back in. But you know where you stand now. And to do that within 2 games of taking over when you're in a national crisis, a national rugby crisis.
And you're the head coach of France where chaos is kind of standard.
Yeah, it's like the Donald Trump administration.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm really high on France.
The thing that's really impressed me about Ireland is the players that we didn't even know the name of 2 years ago who, again, I think Dan Levy is a contender for...
Absolutely.
Yeah, team of the tournament, open side flanker.
And he's their third choice open side.
Exactly. It's incredible.
Which is remarkable.
Levy, Lawmore hasn't really done anything in the Six Nations. But hey, he's good. You know, Porter's coming into the team.
James Ryan. Wow.
Yeah.
A lion. Oh no, those are Ben
Ryan. Iron like a lion, yeah. James Ryan.
It works for James Ryan, I guess. they're a very, very good team.
And my boy Stockers, who is, it's probably him or Furlong for players of the tournament. Those two have been incredible. But the record-breaking Stockdale, who just cannot stop scoring.
Yeah.
It's a weird way to fix the Ulster pack, though, isn't it? Just more more power out wide.
Did you see what Rory Best said about him before the game?
No.
he said, Rory Best has got 100 plus caps. After 9 caps, Stockdale's already overtaken his try scoring record. And Best can't see himself catching him any time soon.
Nope. Very good.
It's phenomenal. First player ever to score 7 tries in a
Six Nations.
In a Six Nations.
And by the way, he's not even considered the exciting winger. That's Larmour.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, but he's so good. He just does everything.
And Keith Earls as well. We've talked about him before.
Yeah,
just,
yeah.
What a tournament he's had. Yeah, it's just outstanding. Well done, Ireland. Fair play. Mm. I think we should commence the post-mortem of England now.
Well, you first.
It's really hard to know where to start here.
Well, how about instead of going for the whole tournament, because I think we've got a pattern for the whole tournament.
Oh, yeah, and we've talked about it on lots of other podcasts.
I actually don't think they were very bad. In fact, defensively, this is what is getting me about the whole England situation, is the Eddie Jones attitude towards them at the end of the game. He gives an interview to Five Live. Maybe he's a bit emotional. Maybe, you know, there's all sorts going on. But I might get the quote wrong. Some England players have played their last game in that shirt. Yeah. Is that right?
Well, I saw that written down. And my reaction when I saw it written down was, that is bang out of order.
Yes.
I've not listened to it to hear it in context. So I will stop short of just treating it like the clickbaity quote that it could be.
But to be fair, it came from Chris Jones, and he is pretty solid.
No, I'm not saying it wasn't accurate, but it could have been said in a way that isn't bad as it sounds.
If it's Wales Online, clickbait. If it comes from someone else...
It sounds... even it written down, it sounds really bad.
I've got the quote here.
Go on.
What, audio?
I could get it on audio. I've got the... Because it's part of a nine-minute interview.
Just do the quote, that's cool.
So the quote is... So he's asked about the players and the squad and... who he thinks might be going forward. He said, some players might struggle to participate in the future. There are some guys who are starting their international careers and they need time. I have to decide whether I have time to get them ready for the World Cup. That's the quote.
Okay, so it's not like...
So there you go. So the quote of saying Eddie Jones says that some players have played their last England game.
What I thought it said.
The key bit is, some may struggle to participate in future.
Well, so that's completely fair.
Yeah, and it's part of a 10-minute interview where he was very honest, very open, very frank about some of the challenges that they've had over the past 2 months, some of the challenges they've got going forward, and what he needs to do to take them forward.
Can I make one observation on the strength of him saying that?
Yeah.
What was he doing farting around with, what did he call them, apprentice players and stuff in his squad? When his squad gets stretched and injuries mean that he needed players to come in from outside, and now he's talking that I might not have time to develop players, it sort of makes his apprentice thing look slightly arrogant.
Hubris, I guess.
Because like, they're not going to play in the World Cup.
Well, they are.
Well, Marcus Smith is. He's your next prediction, yeah.
Yeah, Marcus Smith is. In fact, it's never looked more likely for Marcus Smith, looking at how England play.
You could say he'd be a direct replacement for George Ford.
So who do you think Eddie Jones is talking about there then?
Got to be JJ.
Possibly JJ. He's on a bad run of form. Someone like
badly.
Dan Cole?
I'd be amazed.
But he's talking more about players coming in that might not be up to scratch. I think he might be thinking Don Armand, for example.
So
Don Armand has to stay.
Yeah, Don Armand has to stay. Haskell has to stay. I thought Haskell was England's best player yesterday, actually. I don't know. I mean, do you know who the guy is who's disappointed me the most yesterday? Owen Farrell. And, you know, my love knows no bounds for Owen Farrell. But he was rubbish. I mean, he was utter garbage. And he came into... What worried me about the whole thing was how England were behaving before the game. They were riled up. I think that penalty against the Ireland kicker when Owen Farrell charged him down. It was like, oh, here we go. He's in that mode again.
Yeah, I actually went, yeah, go on. I liked it.
And but he gave away a penalty.
Yeah,
he
gave away a penalty. I thought it was marginal.
I don't.
I'd say it's just stupid. There's no need to do it. And it was the ball, if you watch from where the ball landed, it landed in Elliot Daly's arms, 10 metres outside Ireland 22 with him travelling at pace.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
It was just a bit
stupid.
It was brain dead.
And then he misses all his kicks and the attack is flat and you think, oh.
But the attack's been flat all tournament.
It has.
And they've still not found a well, we might as well say 10, 12, 13 combination that works.
Yeah, because they've got two modes. Zero penetration or zero playmaking. And there's nothing in between.
Well, no. You can't have the second without the first.
Well,
because we were all, rightly, we were all lauding England's attack when they were behind, like, for example, the 3-0 win in Australia, or when they steamrolled the Six Nations Championship before, other than the Ireland game. We were all lauding it because they just had these wrecking ball players that were punching holes all over the place up front.
So my argument about this and how they're playing is kind of like the NFL. Like, some coaches run the ball in order to pass it, some guys pass it in order to run it, okay? But you need a mixture of the two to do both. It feels to me that England are either trying to punch holes in the middle, or they're trying to play too much. There's no disguise.
I actually disagree with that. I think what England were doing is precisely what Ireland are doing. Power game, and then...
Yeah, but they can play as well. I mean, Johnny Sexton...
Well, so can England, when they have...
So you're saying...
You can't deny it. Look at the 24 games out of 25 they won.
They're a different team, though. I mean,
saying that Owen Farrell can't play ball?
Not in this England team, though.
I'll say
the attack has been flat.
Yes, there's no argument there. That is a consequence of the pack getting very little territory and gaining no ground when they're carrying. So you give Farrell or Ford good solid front foot ball, they'll attack brilliantly.
Yeah,
as they did actually in the second half. Well, not brilliantly, yeah, but they looked far more... Actually, to be fair, I was calling for Farrell 10, Teo, because I thought it would be a bit more solid, and they never used Teo as a kind of battering ram in whole game.
No, they didn't, actually.
Which I don't understand, but actually, to be fair, when it went back to Ford Farrell, it looked a lot better, and they were passing the ball, and finally, there was someone distributing the ball to the wingers. Like, why have that back three with that much gas, and then have... Like, Jonathan Joseph's passing was absolutely abysmal.
It was poor. I would say about that, when you bring on, say, George Ford, who is a very good fly half, that was England going from zero penetration to... from zero playmaking, which is what they had before, to zero penetration, which is what happens when you run Owen Farrell at 12. And, you know... Yeah, they scored some tries, but that's going to happen if you've got two playmakers right at the end of the game. If they started with that, they'd have been closed down early doors. It probably would have been worse. And Owen Farrell missed another 33% of his tackles.
So last week you were saying you dropped George Ford, and now you're going it's Owen nope. Owen Farrell's the issue at 10.
That's not what I said.
That is what you said. You said
when did I say that?
At the end of last week's podcast when you went, right, what do we do? I said I'd go Farrell 10, Teo Joseph, and you went, I agree, that's the one change I would make.
I still agree.
But now you're saying Farrell can't play ball, and he's not a good 10.
No, I'm not saying he's not a good 10. I said that he disappointed me, and I don't think England have, you know, they don't have that second playmaker. You can't deny that.
Yeah, no, I know, but you were saying play Teo at 12 last week.
Yeah, and I'd still play that same team.
Okay,
so I'm not saying anything different. Yeah, I'm just saying they've gone from zero penetration to zero playmaking. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
but what is the answer?
They need a mix. They need someone. I think they need playmaking ability from fullback. I said that last week. I appreciate that not everyone's going to think that Good is the answer, but he is a answer.
Controversial. Brown actually had a good tournament.
Brown, yeah, he came on with a bit between
When you say actually, Brown's had a good tournament for like the last 3 years.
Yeah, he has, you're right.
Brown's been outstanding for the last 3 years. And I actually think he was the best player on the pitch when he came on. Yeah. Best England player on the pitch.
Yeah, I think him and Haskell.
And that first try wouldn't have been a try, regardless of whether there was a knock-on, had Brown been under it.
That was kind of symptomatic. Ireland were comfortably the better team and deserved to win, and more power to them for that. But England, everything went wrong. They made the in-goal area deeper, and Ireland used that extra space to score. Rob Kearney clearly knocked the ball on, and they rode a bit of luck there. But these things happen in swings and roundabouts, as I would remind our Welsh friends. When you next time a try doesn't go your way, just remember it does go swings and roundabouts, and that Bundyaki tackle. Now I'm glad it wasn't a penalty only. But if I think someone tweeted us to at Rugby Podcast and put it perfectly when they went, that tackle happens in three different games on Saturday, and you would get one of them would get a penalty, one would get a yellow, and one would get a red.
Yeah,
Which highlights...
I mean...
Yeah, 100%.
It's somewhere between red and yellow, I think.
If that had happened, if that same tackle had happened in all three games...
Well, I mean, we saw
You could have quite legitimately had three different outcomes.
Yeah, we saw almost the same, didn't we? Sonny Bill Williams on Anthony Watson.
Yeah.
And that was a red. So, yeah, absolutely right. Couldn't agree more. Just one more thing on Daly. Everyone's talking about Daly being great.
I didn't think he had a great game.
He
finished well.
He finished well. Turned the ball over three times, which is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't have a great game. Interesting, I've seen him in some people's team of the tournament.
Yeah, I have as well.
Confused me a little bit.
Okay. I think he's just kind of the cause du jour at the moment. Like, he's going to solve all the problems. Maybe he might at 13.
Possibly. Well, so there's two areas, just while we're finishing off the England post-mortem. There's probably two areas that England need to do something different in. And that is back row at the moment.
100%.
They need to do something different. And the 10-12-13, or possibly just the 12-13 combination needs to be... It can't be any of the combinations that have happened in this tournament, because it feels like it's been found out.
I think it's so difficult. Because they're not bad players. I mean, I don't think the playing squad is the problem, actually. I think it's all about the coaching now.
No, so what I would say is the Ford-Farrell combination, which we were calling for before it happened.
Yeah.
The three of us were calling for it prior to the 2015 World Cup.
Even before the 2015 World Cup, we were saying Ford-Farrell. Yeah.
And then it worked for 2 years. It is... So there's two things I would say where it's not working. One, the forwards are not getting the front football, which I've already mentioned. The other is the defences are aware of it, and they are rushing up so quickly to put pressure on Ford and Farrell, because those two, they like to take it flat and they like to have time to pick out their options. Mm. If you take those two things, the front football and their time, away from them, you've destroyed their game. So when that's not working, which it hasn't been all tournament, you need to have other options. Now, the Teo Joseph option, which was tried, didn't work at all, really. What else do we have? Is it time to try Daly? Is it time to bring in Tuolagi? Should Slade be given another go?
I think that England's got to be very... So, my cure for England is just go easy on them. They're a good team. I think the personnel are broadly correct. I don't think there are many squads in the world with more strength and depth. But they've sort of talking themselves into a corner, and I don't think the coaches are helping in any way now.
The strength in depth is interesting, because I can't help but feel that... So I think the back row strength in depth is there, but it's been limited due to injuries.
Yeah.
I think the centres and 10 and centres strength in depth isn't there, because Eddie's only played one way for the whole time, and then as soon as that's been found out, he's not identified an alternative.
Yes.
So they're... Everywhere else, I think there's strength in depth. The front row, the second row, scrum half, you've got strength in depth. The back three, you've got loads of strength in depth. Is that...
Well, they had Luther in that slot, didn't they?
But I would say these asterisk apprentice players, when you could actually have a scrum half playing with you. I mean, he's explained that and said he doesn't think they get enough time in training if he has three. But then again... Even if one stands there on the side and plays very little part, but I mean, it's got to be preferable to, oh crap, we need someone. Let's pick someone for his first international in
10 years.
First start at Twickenham in 10 years.
Can I just say the one guy? I mean, this is why the idea, and it turns out he hasn't exactly said what we thought he has. But when coaches just blanket statement, this guy won't play again, or this guy isn't for me, or this guy, so on and so forth, right? The danger is you then back yourself into a corner. I mean, is it the worst
idea? Rob Shaw is not a seven, for example.
Yeah. Is it the worst idea in the world to give Danny Cipriani a call 2 years out from a World Cup? When your attack can't spark, is he really the worst option that you can think of?
Well, I mean...
Even at fullback, you bring him on.
I wouldn't have been unhappy with him having been in the England squad all this time. And by all means, if you want to call Marcus Smith in as well...
Yeah.
But it just seems really silly... In hindsight, it's 2020, but it just seems silly.
So,
to have not had Don Armand involved, but to have had Zach Mercer involved.
Yeah.
That seems absolutely insane now when you look back.
So yeah. From an England, from Danny Cipriani point of view, I'm pretty certain his last involvement with England was scoring a try from fullback. I'm not saying he's a fullback, but I'm saying that when you added Ford to that mix, you might have been better to add Cipriani on at fullback.
Do you know what? My solution for England is broadly similar to yours, JB, which is don't make any wholesale changes. There are issues, and there's maybe a couple of players to bring in, and a couple of things to tinker with, and there's more questions than answers now. However, it is chill out, relax. Rest them, and just give them a bit of space and get them back to enjoying rugby a little bit more, rather than feeling like it's tense. And secondly, the biggest concern I have is that. Isn't it interesting how against Scotland and against Ireland, England played very well in the second half, and you look back a year to Italy when they messed around with the ruck and it took them so long to actually solve that. And we've talked about it before. England lack intelligence, they lack adaptability, and that could be a symptom of them being overcoached and it being too structured and too tight, and they're not actually... He's not letting the boys play. And they're not being put in positions where they need to actually work it out for themselves.
So the really weird thing about... I agree with that. But the really weird thing about it is, prior to this game, Eddie Jones was making comments about England not being able to play the highly structured game that Ireland play. So it was billed as like the great innovators against Ireland and their very stringent game architecture.
Yeah. But I mean, potentially, it just seems like he might have turned them into robots. But I do think there's a lot of mileage in the argument that they are just flogged. They are battered.
Yes, 100%. England should not be somewhere where you go to get flogged. It should be where you go to become a better team. The last one for you, Sam Simmons. Can we agree? Not an international class 8 yet. I'm not saying he can't be. I'm just saying he's a long way off it. Not an international ball carrier either, I'm afraid.
He could be if you use him sparingly.
Yeah.
And by that I mean have him on the bench, bring him on after 65 minutes when there's a lot of tired bodies and there's more space. In a game like that against a defence so good and so well drilled as Ireland's is, he's just...
If England's plan going forward is Mercer at 8 and Simmons at 7 or something silly like that, God, they're going to get melted.
He could be more useful as a 7 because... You rely less on his carrying and more on his work rate.
But you need,
and his work rate is exceptional.
You need a Billy.
You need
You don't need a Billy. You need the Billy.
You need the one and only Billy Vonnepola, who has been so enormously missed. So
Nathan Hughes will be a lot better than he has been.
He will be.
He needs to be.
Hughes is still not Billy. So last season, and possibly the season before, we were looking at the England team and the pack stats. Pretty much every game in the Six Nations, Billy alone made more metres than every other England forward put together, including subs.
Wow.
So now you take Billy out of that equation and all of the rest are having to... Well, they all combined have to double their workload, which they can't do.
Can we have like a national appeal? There's comic relief and stuff. Can we have a national appeal to like just have one national central contract for Billy Vonnepola that means we sit him in a house made of cotton wool.
Yeah, exactly.
Just sit him there, and as a nation, we all pay our little bit out of our tax for a Billy tax.
Yeah.
Oh, I would happily contribute to the Billy tax.
Yeah, I'd happily shave 10% off the NHS for that.
Vonnepola added tax.
Just one last thing for you. Did anyone think it was weird that Teo just didn't carry? I mean, think back to the summer when he was running over All Blacks for fun.
I don't think he was given the ball to do it.
He tried at times. Yeah, he didn't get enough ball. He tried at times but was swamped by three players. And don't forget, half the Ireland team has played with him. So no... how to stop him.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The other times, when he did pass, his passing is so slow, and he buys himself time by drifting outwards.
Yeah.
I don't know if you noticed this. Instead of carrying hard and then passing, he took like 2 steps forward, then 3 steps across to give himself time, which just meant he was eating up Jonathan Josephs and the outside back space.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yep. You're right on that.
The second best Kiwi centre on the field, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's true. Anyway, in like wrestling, WWE kind of storylines, the WrestleMania victor is always lost. It always loses earlier, like a SmackDown or Raw. They always have the comeback, don't they?
Are you suggesting there's a comeback around the corner?
Well, I'm saying that to win the World Cup, this is just going to be... I'm thinking of the DVD of the World Cup. Well, you know how NFL make those amazing stories of Super Bowl teams?
Yep.
The best stories to watch are the ones where, oh no, everyone had written them off. And then
the
2019 England side.
So you're thinking of the made-for-TV movie of this England team's journey
from
the downfall to winning two championships to downfall again to winning the World Cup.
Give me some unlikely England predictions. You know, cast your mind. Just let your mind run free, boys, and tell me what you think might happen come the World Cup.
Ooh.
You, like your TV script, if you want.
I think that who's a eccentric billionaire like Britain's answer to Elon Musk?
Dyson.
James Dyson would be Britain's
James Dyson is going to buy Bath off Bruce Craig.
Yep.
Buy the whole England side, and then not play any of them, and Bath will get relegated next season just purely for the good of the England team.
Wow.
Yeah, he plays them like 1 in 10 games.
Kind of like the Germany team. mine is going to be a little bit more likely than Tim's, but still, England go lose 3-0 to South Africa. The Eddie gaffes continue. He's just in a snowball of self-pity and despair. He leaves England, and England are taken over by Rob Baxter.
Stuart. Mm. Do you know what? Eddie Jones has lost as many Six Nations matches as Stuart Lancaster now.
Ooh. Wow.
Yep. Yep.
Phil, your wild prediction, please.
God. The backstop. So, I can't see England getting rid of Eddie, no matter what he does.
I can see Eddie walking away.
No, not before 2019.
Nah.
Because his ego's too big. So even if he finishes fifth in next year's Six Nations, England would have to fire him. And I don't think England will fire him. I don't think Eddie will walk away.
So you know, there is a get-out clause for him, though.
He will be there. What I can see him doing is a radical shake-up of his backroom staff and coaching
staff.
It's
not so radical to consider having an attack coach. That's not such a radical thought, is it?
You're right.
Well, I wonder if this is just advancing my theory a bit further. There is a point of Eddie Jones being there 2 years after the World Cup to transition. I wonder if they bring that transition forward. So they still pay him. They don't have to pay him off completely.
Nah.
And they bring the new guy in early.
No. No one who is a genuine contender to be England coach will want to work alongside Eddie Jones.
I agree with that. But you know, maybe move him upstairs. You know, maybe. Do you know what I mean?
Director of rugby operations or something like that.
I still think it's salvageable, but it's it's in a bad shape.
Wildest prediction: there is a fly half injury crisis of humanitarian disaster proportions, and a forgotten man, once the Marcus Smith of English rugby, a forgotten man who is playing very, very well on the continent. At La Rochelle.
Ryan Lamb.
Is brought back for the 2019 World Cup. And Ryan Lamb starts...
Not even brought back. It's just the exceptional circumstances clause.
He's on
activated.
Holiday. He's on holiday.
He's in Japan. He's on holiday in Japan along with Piers Francis.
Yes.
And those two play 10 and 12 and win England the World Cup.
That is quite
actually, no. Wait. When I say win England the World Cup, I mean crash out of the group stages.
Oh, yes, yes. Shame that it's in September. Otherwise, it could be the Lamb Spring. Or Spring Lamb.
Right. I'll tell you what. Let's hear James Haskell and his post-match interview, which is just 1.5 minutes of nothing but cliches, in which he even directly quotes a Hollywood movie.
How the change room's feeling at the moment?
Obviously bitterly disappointed. I think, you know, rugby and anything in life is a roller coaster. You know, you have up bits and we're on a down bit at the moment.
So a bit of Ronan Keating there. Nice. Nice ask.
I think to Ireland, I thought they were very good today. I think we've obviously not had the Six Nations we would have wanted. It's really important that we stick together and whoever is involved in the team moving forward.
I thought that was really interesting. Just him saying whoever's involved. I wonder if he doubts his potential involvement.
If you've got a goal and an objective, you're going to have the good times, you're going to have the bad times, and it's the bad times that you know
You learn about your character, you learn about the people around you, you learn how eager you are to stick with it and how you can take the pressure. And I think that this group of boys here and the coaching staff are fully prepared to do that. You know, last year we were celebrating a win. This year we're, well, listen, if you're not first, you're last, in the words of Ricky Bobby.
Nice.
Ricky Bobby, eh?
Yeah, they look wounded, as they should, as they will be, as all of England is.
Yes, indeed.
I wonder if potentially we just jump sideways slightly.
What's a cornerstone?
To cornerstone, exactly where I was going.
Exactly.
Cornerstone are fine purveyors of outstanding gentlemen's razor attire. Well, not attire is not the right word.
Kit.
Paraphernalia?
Paraphernalia, yeah. Gentleman's paraphernalia. It is high-class, precision-engineered razors, only of the highest quality and of the highest quality materials. So you can have your plastic razors, other companies that are trying to nick Cornerstone's model. How about a free, weighty aluminium shaft engraved with your initials?
Delicious.
It stands up on its end, looks wonderful on your shelf in your bathroom, and because you listen to us, you get an amazing deal. Only £4 for your first order, which will be your free aluminium engraved shaft, 6 precision engineered Cornerstone razors, £4, less than a pint. Get it for a present, get it a mate, get it for yourself, treat yourself. You've earned it after this Six Nations, especially if you're an Ireland fan, celebrate with it. If you're an England fan, commiserate with it. Cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, that's cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, or
Egg10, check out.
The only team more disappointed than England, 5th place in the Six Nations, worst return since 1983, is it?
It's a long time, mate.
Yeah, and well, 1983 when it was 5 Nations and they finished last, but yes, that is correct.
The only team feeling worse than that today are Spain, the side we went out to Madrid to watch. And we thought today, as we record this podcast, it's just the simple coronation that they'd done the hard work. They got a lucky win against Russia. They managed to beat Romania, and all they had to do was beat lowly Belgium, who've only won 1 game in the last 9 and were right down the bottom of the Rugby Europe Championship table, and Spain shat the bed.
I don't really know what to say about this. I don't really want to comment because, on the one hand, I hate criticising refs in any way, but maybe that's because we're so lucky over in England to have the best refs on earth. I mean, they're professional. I think they're full-time, aren't they? If they're not full-time, they're pretty much very nearly.
Yeah.
You know, they get things right. Even like the Celtic nations will tell you that English refs are superb. And there's no question in my mind ever when they ref that things have been done properly. There might be a case to answer here.
So briefly then, what happened is Spain lost to Belgium. Belgium had a good day. Spain had a very poor day. The referee, I watched the game. Phil, you watched a chunk of it.
Yeah.
The referee was made some bizarre calls, I've got to say. I'm not suggesting any untoward suspicious nature of it, but the referee was Romanian. His assistant referees were Romanian. Romania, as a result of Spain losing, qualified for the World Cup at Spain's expense.
Yeah.
And Spain, several weeks ago, asked for the referee to be changed because of this potential conflict of interest.
Yeah.
It was denied, and it's just a very bad look. Spain players at the final whistle behaved really badly. The Spanish Rugby Federation have come out and apologised. They were sarcastic. Well, as one of our Wixie on Twitter at Rugby Podcast said, oh, nice to see Spain enthusiastically applauding the referee at the full-time whistle. Yeah. No, they were sarcastically clapping him and surrounding him, goading him. It was a pretty ugly look.
It is pretty ugly.
They were incensed.
Yeah, they are incensed. And there are a few people saying, throw the book at Spain, this, that and the other. And I, you know, as you well know, I'm a little bit sceptical of throwing the book at anyone for anything, really.
Well, they've just lost. I mean,
it's a once in a lifetime opportunity for them. I mean, these are professional players; they're amateurs, and they've done hell.
Put their careers on hold just to get to the World Cup.
It is one hell of an effort, and they are that close. And now they're not going to do it. They might beat Portugal, then they've got to go to Samoa home and away, and then it's the
they'll probably lose to Samoa if they get through Portugal, and then it will be a repechage match against Canada, last chance, last roll of the dice.
Yeah. Canada and a couple of others, which might be Madagascar or Zimbabwe and Malaysia, possibly.
Good teams deal with bad refs, but the penalty count, I believe...
This is outrageous.
...is penalty... Well, I've seen it written in two different places, so it's either 4 penalties for Spain or 8 penalties for Spain, and 24 penalties for Belgium or 28 penalties for Belgium. 28-8 or 24-4 is one of the two.
That's amazing. I mean, for Belgium to be so... This is where I kind of think, really? For Belgium to be that disciplined, they only gave away 4 penalties. I mean, when Wales did something similar against England, 2 penalties, it was one of the most remarkable feats in rugby for God knows how long.
And the ball in play time for a rugby union match, I believe, is only around about 40-something minutes.
So I've not seen... I can't find the penalty stats other than kind of speculation on Twitter.
Well, that's because someone has gone to try and watch the game again and count them, but Rugby Europe have taken that game...
That's very conspiratorial.
...off of their website.
Oh, yeah. That's not conspiratorial. That's actually true.
So just a couple of things to clarify. So a few people on Twitter have been tweeting to @WorldRugby to say, what's going on? Why have you appointed a Romanian ref and Romanian touch judges for a game of such importance, particularly after Spain requested that they'd be changed? Spain requested they'd change to anyone.
Yeah, and bearing in mind we saw what happened with the South African assistant referee for the Ireland-England game, and Ireland kicked up a fuss. That was changed, so understandably.
It wasn't World Rugby. It was Rugby Europe who appointed.
The president for which is Romanian, which again just makes it a bad look.
The president is Romanian, which is... So it's not great. And having watched... I watched the first 20 minutes live. I've then watched extended highlights, which admittedly were cut by a Spanish gentleman. It's not good. And they get... As the game progresses, the decisions, particularly around the ruck and particularly around the scrum, get more and more questionable.
Yeah,
there's several decisions. So there's one where Spain get awarded a penalty. The ref gives advantage. The Spanish winger then breaks through the line and he's going to score.
Oh no!
And the ref pulls it back to give Spain the penalty.
Oh no!
It doesn't look good. From what I've seen, it doesn't look good at all. Now, the Spanish players harassing the referee and the Spanish number 9 grabbing the referee at 80 minutes, that is completely unacceptable.
Is it? I mean, it's not acceptable. It's not.
No, under no circumstances is that acceptable.
What, even if he's just ruined your entire career?
It's never...
Even if you've been doing nothing, but for 18 years, working hard, working out, practicing your skills, you're this close, and... Because he might, if he is corrupt, he deserves everything he gets and more.
So, it's never acceptable. And if he is corrupt, then you trust the proper channels. Grabbing him is not going to do anything.
No, it's not.
It's never acceptable.
It's the same as Dan Bigger bleating in every Wales game.
No, it's not the same.
But it's like all of it. We stamp that out of the game, we stamp this out of the game.
But it's not acceptable. No. It is understandable.
Yes.
Particularly given the language barrier. So the ref is giving penalty after penalty after penalty to Belgium, and I can see, the Spanish captain can't even properly communicate with the referee because he doesn't speak Spanish. So it is a farcical situation.
Meanwhile, who was reffing the Romanian game?
Not the Romanian game. Who is refereeing the Germany versus Russia game?
Yes,
which has pretty much no significance whatsoever. Aviva Premiership professional referee Ian Tempest.
That's the boy they should have flown. I mean,
and there's a French professional referee in Georgia, Romania.
That's not on. It's not on.
But this is Rugby Europe. I think questions have to be asked about this, because that game it descended into a farce at the end of it. And if the referee had, if there'd been a referee giving transparent decisions and being able to communicate with either party, that could have been prevented.
Yeah, I don't think we've heard. Well,
so by the way, we probably
have heard the last of this, because it's only Spain. If this was, if this was England, Wales, Ireland, Scotland, France, we would never hear the end of this.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and that maybe this is kind of why Tier 2 rugby is Tier 2 rugby. You know, maybe these are the shenanigans that go on when you don't pay attention. I mean, we've only been following it really for two or three years.
Yeah,
so.
Have you ever been in a situation, Phil, where you've been absolutely incensed or just...
Yes.
Either you've been on the right side of a, like, oh my God, that's outrageous, or on the good side of... Or on the wrong side of it?
I've never... As far as I can remember, I've never thought a referee was corrupt or biased.
So I have, actually.
I have.
So I'll tell you why, and I'm going to love telling this. When I used to play in North Wales for Colwyn Bay, we were convinced as a team that the Welsh-speaking referees did not like us. We were convinced. And one time, as the referee rounded the corner to the change room, he overheard us saying, oh, it's such and such again. And one of our lads went, oh. And he popped his head around and sarcastically said, that's a great sign. And then tried out, we got beaten. So, yes, Welsh-speaking referees did not like us.
My example was in a Boosa University semi-final against UIC.
Mm.
And it was a local Welsh referee.
Oh, right, there we go.
And we watched the video several times afterwards, and it was mind-boggling, the decisions. And there's one player, he just constantly he penalised our seven again and again and again and again and again. And then after the game, our former Welsh A international coach went up to the ref, just had a chat with him. Just, you pinged our seven a lot. What was going on? Oh, yeah, he clearly doesn't know the laws. You need to have a word with him. You need to coach him. He went, that's Joel Abt. He's captain for Caerphilly in the Welsh Premiership. And the ref just went completely silent. Again, when talking to a Wales A coach, I think he felt like...
Yeah.
It was. I felt robbed because I never got to play at Twickenham in Boosa. That was my chance.
It's a strange one, reffing, because I assume you ref because you love rugby and you love applying laws. I mean, it's a weird combination.
Yeah. Who doesn't love applying laws?
Well, I guess you'd be a great ref, actually, Phil. Maybe that should be your thing.
Tim, you're a qualified ref, aren't you?
I've ref before, yeah, because when I was a teacher, I did. And
I've done a bit of ref.
Do you know what? I'm sure the ref believed what he said, but
I don't.
When there's
I believe he wanted to give the penalties. The more I hear about this story, and look, I'm just reacting now from what you guys have told me. It sounds corrupt.
Well, I wanted to go and watch the game again to get a bit more of a sense about. But they've taken the game down, so
yeah, that's not a good look either.
No, it's not. It's all a very bad look.
Yeah, it is. And it could have been...
Gutted, absolutely gutted. And the worst part about the whole thing is the game was growing so nicely in Spain.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really going places. And I hope that this does not cause it to fall back.
The other side of this is, so Romania have qualified for the World Cup, which should be cause for celebration.
Yeah.
If before this tournament, if either Romania or Spain had qualified for it, I would have been delighted. Because they're the two teams we've watched last time. They both won when we've been out there. They're both, I probably prefer the Spanish setup, but they've both got setups and they've both got incredibly passionate fans and passionate teams.
Yeah,
It takes the gloss off that Romania
qualification. Do you know what else? Before the game, earlier this week, Lynn Howells said, someone has to carry the can for our failure to qualify for the World Cup, so I will be stepping down after this tournament.
Oh,
that's the Romania coach, Lynn Howells.
Wow. Or the ref stepped up.
Yeah.
I need to look into this further before saying any more.
Yeah.
So, on our Global Bro Sports WhatsApp group,
yep.
Friend of the pod, Bryn Williams, has sent a 10-minute cut that's on YouTube.
Has he?
Yeah, it's worth watching.
I'm not going to watch it now.
No, don't watch it now. Watch it after and be as outraged as you want. And jump to enormous conclusions by watching
please.
What
a farce.
I hope we haven't heard the last of it. Right, well, on more positive stuff, let's pick a team of the tournament, which will be relatively quick to do, I would have thought.
Do you want to talk about the Wales game or anything like
that? Yeah. We'll do that after this. So, fullback, Rob Carney.
Why not?
Is it?
Yeah. No, actually, Minozzi.
Oh, Minozzi. Yeah, Minozzi. Minozzi, whichever it is.
Has to be Minozzi.
A bright spark in a stuttering Italian performance. Wingers then. Stockers, clearly.
I would go for Teddy Thomas, even though he only played two games.
Yeah, I think I would. Those, I mean, Keith Earls has had a great tournament.
Keith Earls has.
And that tap tackle, reminiscent of Peter Stringer.
Mm. Watching that tap tackle again in slow motion. So he actually delays. So he goes, and then he just delays by a fraction of a second, because if he went first time, he would have got Daly's standing leg,
yeah,
which is obviously useless. It was a remarkable tap tackle.
It was.
Maybe, as I say, Johnny May might deserve a mention, because every time he's played, he's done something. But no, I'm happy with those two.
Yeah, so Teddy Thomas and Stockers.
Stockers and Semi-Thomas. I like highlighting the positives and those two game-winning tries.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't game-winning. Could have been a game-winning try against Ireland, but game-breaking anyway. Centres, then. This is difficult because there's not really been standouts.
I think Hadley Parks had a great tournament.
Hadley Parks has been good.
That's a good shout.
Bastereau, definitely for me.
I love Bastereau.
I think Bastereau, the three games he played, was the best player on the park for all three of them.
Yeah.
Like, even the Wales game?
Yeah.
Sorry, second best player. I think he was brilliant. Alan Wynne-Jones was the best player in the park.
Oh, yeah, comfortably. All right, let's go for Mathieu Bastereau with...
I just love seeing him back.
See, do you highlight the positives and go Hugh Jones for a couple of great performances and a couple of questionable performances?
Yeah, Hugh Jones.
Yes, just for that.
Hugh Jones and Bastereau.
Yeah, yeah.
So, halfbacks then. Do we just go the Irish halfbacks? Is there anyone else?
I think...
Gareth Davis.
Gareth Davis had a cracking tournament.
Laidlaw has got to be in the conversation as well.
Gareth Davis, honourable mention. Laidlaw, honourable mention. But
Machinot, honourable mention.
But Murray
Sexton.
Yeah.
Can't see past him.
Front row then. Well, Tadhg Furlong is.
Yeah.
As you already said, Phil, potential player of the tournament.
Rob Evans. I love Rob Evans, so it doesn't really matter what he'd have done.
Keane Healy has really bounced back to form. I like Rob Evans as well.
I really rate Rob Evans.
Yep.
Mako's been so quiet.
Oh, yeah.
He's so exhausted.
So go on, Phil.
So
Rob Evans or Keane Healy?
Keane Healy. Okay. Keane Healy to come back and keep Jack McGrath out of the team shows how hard he's been working.
Hooker?
The French guy.
Gerardo.
No, McAnally.
What?
McAnally.
No way, mate. Not even close.
McAnally has been brilliant.
Gerardo's been heroic. He did 31 tackles in that first game.
31 tackles?
He's not that's got the same dynamism.
I mean, that's what some backs will make it in half a season.
Okay. You're outvoted anyway,
you're,
Phil.
You're outvoting me. Let me just have my displeasure noted.
Okay.
Locks, then.
Vahamina. Banter! Alan Wynne-Jones and somebody else.
Yeah.
Over the whole tournament... I actually think Alan Wynne-Jones has been
class.
Alan Wynne-Jones has been class, and he's definitely in the mix. I actually think Corey Hill over the five games has been the better of the two Welsh locks.
I don't think he has. I think he does things differently to Alan Wynne, though. Like, he's got a better offloading game, that kind of thing.
But Alan Wynne-Jones is a warrior.
Alan Wynne-Jones is class.
James Ryan has been awesome.
Yeah,
James Ryan has been good. Hendo has been very good when he's played.
Yeah.
Is there anyone else?
No.
Scotland? Oh,
No, there's no one else.
Swinners,
yeah.
Soon to be British and Irish Lions swinners.
Well, maybe next time around.
So do we go... Are we going James Ryan and Alan Wynne, or are we going...
I've liked...
Alan Wynne and Corey Hill, or...
Alan Wynne and...
go James with Lions Ryan. Pairing, Alan Hill. Alan Wynne-Jones and Corey Hill.
He's been one of the breakthrough players of the tournament, Corey Hill.
Yeah, yeah. Along with
after
James
the
Ryan.
Green,
well, the Lions breakthrough player.
The Lions breakthrough player. Yeah,
we'll never get old.
I will give an honourable mention. He shouldn't be in it, but I think Launchbury's been England's best lock in the tournament.
Yeah,
particularly given that Laws has only played six.
I mean, Itoje hasn't really got any recognition because of his, you know, how amazing he's been in the past, but he has still played well.
I thought he was decent yesterday. His line out actually, he completely wrecked. Who did we play last time? France. He completely ruined France's line out. He was good again yesterday.
It sounds weird. I'd love to lift Mario. So, as you know, Tim, when you do lifting, there are some lads that are just a pleasure to lift.
Oh yeah.
I wonder if professional players are a pleasure to lift, or if they're actually too big.
Yeah. Like I'd much rather lift Maro Itoji than...
A Launchbury.
Will Skelton.
Will Skelton.
Will Skelton. Oh, God.
Billy goes up again. Maro, I bet, is a delight.
That shows how good the push press is of these rugby players. Yeah. Billy Vunipola gets thrown up in the air.
Tailball, I think.
Yeah. Worst ever second rotor lift?
Would probably be Craig Quinnell.
He's up there.
I believe Scott Andrews played second row against Treviso once.
Ollie
Cohn.
Uini Antonio. Yeah, Ollie Cohn was the one I was going to say.
Uini
Antonio played second row for La Rochelle.
I'm going to put together a top five group of locks I want to lift. just have a quick go on them.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's funny watching those old videos of Five Nations matches where they don't lift.
So weird, isn't it?
It's really odd. Will Skelton is tailor-made for that era of rugby.
Just waving around like morons.
And the way they start a scrum, they set in a couple of seconds.
Tell you what,
they run to a scrum and just set.
It's like rugby league scrums.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other weird thing about watching old rugby is it's unwatchable for the penalties, but how quickly they get on with it.
Yeah.
So it's not like retreating back 10 yards, like, tap.
Gone.
Tap. It's amazing.
We've just got our back row to pick now.
Oh, right, yeah. I want to say Shingler for me.
Yeah, I would go with Shingler.
He's amazing.
Let's go with Shingler, yeah.
Who else? Who's that? Hamish Watson's done pretty well.
I think Camara has been awesome.
Oh,
for France.
Him.
And Levy's been brilliant for Ireland.
Yep. Levy has been brilliant.
They can work out which positions they're going to play. They're all good players.
CJ Stander's been very good as well.
So who's been the best eight?
Stander.
Probably Stander.
Stander, there's... I can't say the guy's name. It begins with T for him.
That'll do.
Gordon's played there.
No one's been as good as Stander.
Yeah. Stander, his try against England. So you talk about yard after contact.
Mm.
He first got... Made
I want that made into a stat that they show on the telly and stuff, because it's really important.
Yeah, but have you ever?
That's far more important than Mike Brown's got. I mean, I'm not knocking Mike Brown. He had a great game. I just picked his name at random because he's a fullback. Mike Brown's run 120 meters, but 100 of those will be returning a kick before contact.
The first 50
meters with your theory, Tim. Have you met the Opta guys? They're all very nice, but they basically go...
I was outraged when he told me this. on the week that I lost a fantasy rugby draft match by 1 point.
So that's why I only pick Sale players, really, for my fantasy rugby draft. Because I sit next to the Opta guy, so I just give him a little...
an
extra 5 meters.
Another tackle there. Did you not see that tackle?
Come on. Hey, mates! I'm like a Spanish player harassing the ref.
The most disappointing thing about chatting with the Opta guys, and it's something I've suspected for some time, is they don't record negative yards. So if a player gets driven back five yards, that doesn't count as -5. Mm. They only count positive yards,
which is
why Thomas Francis always ends up bang on zero.
But it's even more amazing.
Any lower.
Yeah, it's even more amazing that he gets selected to 1 yard. Like, no, maybe he's driven. No, he actually only made 1 yard.
Mm. So there you go. There is our team of the season. You mentioned Thomas Francis. He's had a good tournament.
He is so much better.
He's
than
so
he was
much better than he was.
You play with and against some of the best players in the world. You got some of the best coaches in both Wales and Exeter.
You get better by osmosis.
You've got to. You can't get any worse with all of that that information and that coaching and physical experiences.
I'm surprised he hasn't just got
being imposed on you.
I mean, I wonder how I would.
I think it's the Don Armand haircut that did it.
I wonder how I'd fare in a professional setup. As in, like, would I just get horribly depressed and go home? if I had to go in, because if I don't go in, I don't get my mortgage paid. Family are relying on it. I've got to go in every day. I've got to train. Do I get better at rugby, or do I never even come near the A team, get depressed, and just spiral out of control?
I think you'd be constantly. It'd be like being back at school with a kid that didn't want to do PE. You'd constantly like pretend you had a limp and make excuses not to train, or can I just have a rub down with the physio today?
Act like Neymar.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot my boots today, sir.
Oh, God. Imagine, no. Imagine telling Steve Diamond that you forgot your boots.
I love this. So I love this. So did you ever play, or do you know Dan Montague?
Phil? I know that name.
I know the name.
He coaches. He used to play at Nottingham. He played at Leicester Tigers a bit. He was a back.
Yeah.
He was a back row, second row, blindside, and he got the nickname, and still has the nickname in rugby circles, Stash. because when he came over from Australia, he went to Leicester Tigers to train, and all he had was the kit that he came over with. He had those old cotton shorts. Well, you remember the ones that had the button across and the
I had them in school,
and the rope like cord.
Yeah,
yeah.
He had ones like that. He had some old school cotton rugby shirt and almost like wool socks. And he turned up at the Leicester training ground wearing that. They ripped it, and his nickname was Stat, and has been Stash for his whole rugby career.
I think it's funny because fitness brands spend so much money trying to get players to wear different things, compression tights and all they want to do is wear vests. They want to wear the smallest singlet they can find, and that, unless it's very cold, will do them for about 95% of the time.
Yeah, and I mean, Sam Burgess's move to rugby union is largely hailed as a failure, but he looks incredible in a vest.
Well, I actually think he bought vests with him, because NRL vests are some of the best stash out there.
Yeah, and for a long time.
In fact, that is Sam Burgess's legacy, is vests on rugby players.
It is, yeah. What a legacy.
What a legacy.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wales. Wales, France. Wales. Let's talk about Wales.
The game, there was, in my mind, thinking back, I watched the whole game and then I've watched the highlights. There is one highlight, and that is that Fiku try. Which from the start, from the break from Machinaud, from the hooker going through and the handling, to Fiku breaking through and scoring, was exceptional. Virtually the whole of the rest of the game, the performance of...
People wearing daffodils in the crowd.
Yep.
Well, the performance of Tranduk.
Oh, God. Horror show.
Which is remarkable, because 3 minutes in, he drops that goal, and you're like, right, this is on. His confidence could not be higher. It's the perfect start to an international game. And then after that, 30 seconds later, a minute later, he should have been collecting the Gribber kick through.
That was so bad.
That bounces, and he completely misses the ball, claps his own hands, and Williams dives in, and from there it just got worse and worse and worse. So
that Tranduk moment was up there with Farrell kicking a ball at Haskell's head.
It's such unfortunate. What's the word for it? Like, just scenery, I guess. Yeah. Visuals are so bad.
Yeah,
symptomatic of England this tournament.
Yeah. And that was that France moment for Tranduk, his kick missing it,
missing the kick at sticks, missing touch. Yeah. Shortly before that,
missing touch from a penalty.
Which was so it was such an important time in the game, because France were on the up. They should have had a line out 5 yards from Wales' try line, and he misses touch.
By the way, if they win that, do they finish second, France?
They would have done.
Yeah. Wow,
yeah.
I mean, they are truly back.
I was very disappointed with Wales. I know France have got a very good defence, and so maybe they matched up against that, but Gatlin talked before the game about, we know we're going to have to put in a big defensive shift. And the selection, I don't know, it just felt very... I was worried. I was going, what? Have you not learnt from what's happened, Gatlin, that this is... Don't go back to type. Don't go back. You've found the right way forwards. Don't go back. It felt like Wales went back a little bit.
I disagree. I think they started doing what they wanted to do, but I think France dragged them into it.
Yeah, so I was actually happy with the selections, although I would have had Shingler starting. But I was happy with the selections, and I think they got brought down to the France game.
They kicked a lot.
They did. But they were struggling to get any go forward in their pack, because that France defence and that France pack is just so massive.
Yeah, I tell you what, I mean, there's not really much to say about this game. Yeah, it's good. Well, it's terrible. There you are.
Yeah.
But it
wasn't good.
Yeah. But I will say this. I think Wales will come out of this tournament the happiest of all. I mean, obviously, no, Ireland are the happiest, but Wales the most improved and definitely the second happiest, because they've uncovered so much more depth than they had.
They have done.
And kind of a happy accident. In the way that when Eddie Jones arrived, it was a happy accident I don't think anyone was thinking he was going to play Ford Farrell, and that just kind of worked. Yeah. It all fell into almost. It's been a happy accident that Gatland has now found another way to play and another group of players that have been given exposure and actually shown that they can do it.
Thing is, he's just so smart. I mean, he's the most flexible, most tactically astute coach probably on the planet. I mean, he's one of maybe three. He's incredible. I mean, he's been doing this for 10 years, and every time he's in a dip, I mean, his dips don't last because he's that good at his job. He needed a solution. He just basically copies the Scarlets. I mean, that's
they finished second, but they did just win three games. I don't think, aside from Ireland, there's anyone who should feel too happy about where they are.
No, I think they'll be all right. Coming into it, you could argue that they're going to be finishing, you know, fourth or third. To go second and find.
But it's all on points difference because it's like games won. I think in Six Nations.
That is the fair way to do it.
Oh, no, I know. But it's like, actually, England, I look at it more like England and France only won two games. Scotland and England only won. No.
Yeah, two games. So Italy won none. France and England won two.
France and England won two, and Wales and Scotland won three. Rather than they finished second or third or fourth. I don't really. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't really care. It's games won.
It does feel like Ireland streets ahead.
Yeah.
Wales through to England, about the same.
Yeah.
About the same. And Wales, you can say about the same trajectory. Wales is better than England.
Yeah.
Wales are going up. England are going down. Yeah. Scotland are going up. France are going up.
Yeah.
England are going down of all those. Yeah, but so, they're about the same level.
I mean, they've got Sam Warburton to come back. Toby Faletau is just amazing. I'm a fully signed up member of the Shinganate now.
yeah, and then, are you living Navidi Loca, though?
Oh, love that. yeah, I mean, he's another one that they've discovered. Hadley Parks is playing well. Elliot D, Owen Watkin, you know, they've got. Pratchell had an all right couple of games.
Yeah, they have uncovered some players, and Corey Hill's been a total breakthrough star. Shingler as well. So yeah, it's I'd feel good if I was a Wales fan, to be honest. Did you see Sergio Parisse after the final whistle in the Italy Scotland game?
Upset?
You have never seen a man more stone faced, and you could just gutted. He was walking around and he was shaking everybody's hand. His facial expression did not move. It's worth just watching his facial expression.
Weird, isn't it? You would have thought he might be used to it by now.
His 100th defeat, that was.
Oh, God. How many cups has he got?
I don't know.
115 or something like that.
More than that.
He's not had 15 wins and 100 defeats.
Well, yeah, it will be more than that.
If you play the Six Nations every year...
133.
Wow, that's amazing.
Who's the most capped international player ever? Richie McCaw.
Richie McCaw.
140 something.
147 I have off the top of my head.
Parisse could beat that.
Oh, I hope he does. He should. Just stick around just to beat that.
So, here's a question for you. Moving on to the Ireland.
148 caps, Richie McCaw.
So, Italy, Scotland, right? Does the Italian back row have more carrying power than the English back row?
So if you play Parisse, Negri and Pelledri,
yeah,
there's some serious carrying potential there.
Well done, Jake Pelledri.
Yeah, congratulations.
That's a way to announce yourself. That break to set up.
It was Tommaso Allen's second
Tommy Allen.
Can you? I mean,
and it was the number 8, Ryan Wilson, that he ran through as well.
Yeah,
so not a small chap.
So. Gloucester pinned all their hopes on Carl Ferns coming over. Didn't happen. And maybe one of the luckiest moves for them in terms of their salary cap. I mean, I'm sure he would have done a great job. They've bought in Pelledri and...
Well, they haven't brought him in. He was Hartbury College,
wasn't it? Yeah, so they've promoted him through. Yeah. Must cost a fraction of what they were going to pay. Yeah. Not much of a drop-off. And my word, it's just a classic case, isn't it? Opportunity is equally as important as anything else.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just looking at the list of the most capped players.
So on.
Richie McCaw in first.
Well, let's have a guess.
148.
So Jason Leonard's England, so he's got to be up there. Is he on like 120 something?
Not quite. He's 119.
Okay. How many are there between?
He's in joint 12th.
12th?
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. He's the top Englishman.
Paul O'Connell.
Okay, so you're going to...
No, he's 18th with 115.
So you're going to have, like, minor nations players.
Geth.
Everyone on here is tier one nation.
Gethin.
Wow.
Gethin is in fourth place, tied with Sergio Parisse on 134.
Bod must be right up there.
Bod is number two. 141.
Oh, so the other one is scrum off Australia.
Gregan.
Gregan is number three.
Okay.
Anyone else want to... okay, you both get to name one.
All right.
Whoever's highest gets a point. And okay. we'll do three rounds of that.
All right.
Oh, wow.
See, no, I don't think he's that high. Oh, this is okay.
Go on.
Geez, what's his name?
Give me a clue and I'll say it.
French winger, little guy. No, God, what am I talking
Dominici?
About? No. What am I talking
Bilicelles?
About? No. Forget it. I was thinking Dominici. No. Forget that. So it's going to be another Kiwi. Let's go. Meilamu.
Meilamu is a good shout.
It is a great shout. That.
Go on, JB.
I'm going to go with a guy whose name I can't remember. French captain Fabien Pelous.
So I can tell you, Pelous is.
Maybe it's too early that.
14th with 118.
Good.
Kevin Meilamu. Could not be beaten because we've already named everyone higher. He's in sixth place with 132. So 1 point to Tim.
Yeah. You can go first now.
Oh, I'm pretty much out.
you're out of international rugby players.
Dan Carter.
Dan Carter is on the list.
Oh, damn it. I can't believe I didn't think of him.
DC.
Injured quite a lot, though. I think that might affect
him. He's
things.
Had a few injuries.
How many's he got? Matt Gitto. No, you're looking down the list. He's obviously nowhere near.
So
I was just thinking he's been to several World Cups.
Dan Carter is in joint 19th place.
19th?
With 112.
Oh, he's got more than I thought.
Gitto is 38th place with 103. So
there's a lot of centurions.
A lot of centurions.
There are, I can tell you, 51 centurions. So, final round, deciding round.
Oh, no.
Tim, with 1 point all.
Okay.
Don't panic, Tim, because I've got mine.
Oh, no! Right. Okay. No. Oh, man, no, I can't think of any.
Ben Morgan, is that what you're thinking?
Yeah.
You're thinking Matt Kvesic?
Marlon Yard.
I will go with what's his name? Centre, South African, tall, blonde hair.
Oh, that's very good. Damn it.
What's the guy's name? You know who I'm thinking about.
I know who you're
Was the captain?
Percy Montgomery.
No, I'm going
to go Jan de Villiers.
No, Jan de Villiers. Jean de Villiers, that's what I was thinking. That's
Tim goes Jean de Villiers.
Oh, you beat me. I was going to Adam Jones.
Oh, no. Oh, no, is he a centurion? I don't think he is.
He is, yeah.
Oh, he is. Oh, you might be beating
him. Sure he is, actually.
Jean de Villiers,
yeah.
I can tell you, is in 28th place.
What? I thought he was the record cap holder for South Africa.
Record cap for South Africa is...
Mark Andrews.
Victor Matfield.
Oh, man. So, I bet Backy's up there as well.
Jean de Villiers, 28th place with 109 caps. Adam Jones... 48th place with 100. So Tim wins 2-1.
Go run through some of those other legends that we haven't mentioned.
So I'll run down. I'll give you the top 20-ish. So Richie McCaw, Brian O'Driscoll, George Gregan, Gethin Jenkins, who is not retired.
Nope.
But it's unlikely he's going to get any more.
Paul O'Connell didn't even
then
mention.
Sergio, Kevin Meilamu, Ronan Gara has 130.
Wow.
Stephen Moore. Victor Matfield, Alan Wynne-Jones, 126 for Alan Wynne-Jones. He'll be adding to that.
Wow.
He might be. I think he's a good bet to be most capped of all time.
That's a great bit of business, the 18-month deal for Ospreys. So they're going to wrap him in cotton wool. get him making sure he plays the World Cup, and then but immediately after the World Cup he can go.
Yeah. That's great. it's good for him as well. Yeah. So he can go and get a big money contract. It'll be about 33, 34 at the end.
Perfect
of that.
Lock age.
Yeah. Brian Habana, Castro Giovanni, Jason Leonard, Fabian Palouse, Tony Woodcock, Adam Ashley Cooper, Nathan Sharp, Paul O'Connell, Marco Bortolami, Dan Carter, Rory Best, who's still got a few more to go.
Fair play.
Ross Ford, Philippe Seller, John Schmidt.
Ross Ford! Ross Ford on that list is a joke!
Close your laptop, come on, let's move this on.
I mean, what? I mean, as in terms of who look the best, he's number one. He's an incredible specimen. Is he still playing?
He is still playing. Yeah.
But come on.
He has 110 Scotland caps and one British and Irish Lions test cap.
A couple of bits of news. Should we run around?
Do it.
You just mentioned someone who's close to being a centurion, and his ambition is to try and get to 100 caps.
Let's start.
Jamie Roberts.
Oh, yeah, of course. So Jamie Roberts moved
to Bath.
This apparently...
Going the opposite way with Benny Tapps.
Yeah. Bad move.
Bad move for who?
Bath. Bad move for Bath on a couple of reasons. I think Benny Tapps is better for them than Jamie Roberts is. Jamie Roberts, obviously, great leader, blah, 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 blah. This stinks, to me, of an owner signing players without much of a input from the DOR. And, I think that is exactly what's happened.
And what situation might they have been in had they just paid Ollie Devoto and picked him as their 12?
Oh, you're absolutely right. Yeah. Or Kyle Eastmond. Well, no, not Kyle Eastmond because he's been injured.
Yeah, more Devoto, who has also been injured, but it's just young Englishman potential against older non-English.
Yep.
You know where you are with both Benny Tapps and Jamie Roberts and Benny Tapps, both good players, good Premiership players, but they'll be on. I'd imagine they're both on a considerably more than Devoto was and probably would have been.
Saracens are opening up contract negotiations with the Vunipoli, and Billy Vunipola has said before he would be paid less if he could play less.
Well,
which I think might be something Saracens actually potentially negotiate.
I mean, I guarantee it won't happen because when it comes to it, it's about cash, no matter what you say. But okay, fine. If he does it, he does it.
But if he can guarantee that he's going to play, let's say 15 or 16 games a season for Saracens, and he gets. Kind of plays two or three, then gets a rest week, and that means that he plays every game for England per season, which is worth £300,000 to him.
Yeah,
more through sponsorship deals.
This Six Nations, he has missed out on, without even the sponsorship, just on the match fees alone, £150,000.
Yeah.
No, £125,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
£125,000 just for 7 weeks' work.
So Sale have been in the news. Massively. I think this might have happened the week before, but we're in Madrid. James Phillips from Bath has gone.
Enormous news.
Well, yeah, massive
story. I tell you what, I think Dimes will do all right with him. And another, this is not a large story, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Wales under 20 prop, Joe Jones. Now, why is Joe Jones important? Joe Jones is important because he has the distinction, the career highlight. He's come from Perpignan, by the way. Didn't get picked up by a Welsh team, but his highlight is squatting me in a bar in Chester.
And that is no mean feat.
Yes.
Not only because of the weight.
As a 17-year-old.
Yeah, not only because of the weight, but because you're so damn wriggly.
Mm. Yes.
So now what we're going to be hearing a lot more is that story of, I was squatted by Joe Jones. And just to warn you then, if he's coming to Sale, you're going to hear much more about
James
Phillips. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Always liked him.
I coached him in our school first 15.
Not the first 15 with Redford Pennycook as well.
Redford Pennycook, no. And Chevy Pennycook. That was an incredible back row, yeah.
Yeah, so that's good. And more proper news.
Go on.
Altrak has gone to
Quinns
as well, yeah.
That's not a bad signing.
He's not done anything for a while.
He's been injured quite a bit.
Mm.
I think if they can get him fit and get him firing, it's good to have some depth.
Tell you what, he's got a nice looking CV now.
Saracens,
Bath and Quinns. I think that's all signings, is it not?
One thing I've just noticed, because I've I put out a tweet which about the... I know it's actually come to our rugby podcast one, but a lot of people, basically, I'm seeing a lot of professionals commenting on the Spain situation. So Tialata, remember him?
Yes, I do.
So they've all. I think there's a lot of interest in it because it's about who Samoa may play to qualify.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people from the Southern Hemisphere have been getting involved. So Nima Tialata has said, heartbreaking to see a game of rugby dominated by the match officials, in brackets, all three Romanian, and one-sided. Hard luck, Spain. And then Tino Pululegaga, you know that one. Was it really that bad? And Nima Tialata saying, yeah, the refs were playing up. I would have done the school lunch ones on hands on head. Poor guys played their hearts out only to get, I don't know what, Kea refs like that today. I think that means, says basically people from the rugby world are starting to take an interest.
So, well, they should do.
So let's watch this
actually
story.
Yeah, why don't our listeners tweet World Rugby?
No,
or,
Rugby, no, Europe.
Rugby Europe. Not World. It's not World Rugby,
because it is pretty outrageous actually.
Yeah.
If true, I'm just reacting from what you guys say. I'll be quiet. Anything else you want to talk about? Are there any predictions for next week?
Well, a couple of things. So, one, we've not really touched on the Italy-Scotland game.
Yeah, it was good.
It was really good. It was a really good game. Italy scored three very nice tries. Tommaso Allan and Minozzi again. Minozzi is class. I'd love to see him come to the Premiership, because he's such an exciting runner and such an intelligent player.
Exeter, maybe.
Possibly, yeah. Scotland, they have had well-publicised troubles on the road. They did continue. They played some nice stuff, but they also... they probably weren't the best team overall, which is surprising given how good Scotland have been at times and how bad Italy have been at times.
Well, Scotland are the new France.
Well, yeah. The new old France.
Yes, the new old France. They don't travel well. Incredibly exciting, like to offload.
But Scotland did enough, and it was a Greg Laidlaw kick in the 79th minute that won it for them. So, well played in the end. Scotland, I do feel bad for Italy, because it would have been nice for them to get that win.
Yeah, gutted for them. But Scotland rode their luck.
Yeah.
They absolutely punished England and dominated them, but in this occasion they ground it out and found a way to win from a 14-point deficit as well.
Yeah.
So, they showed a different side. Wasn't pretty, but they showed.
They got the win.
Fair play to them.
One other thing to mention. So not in that game. Moving on to the Rugby Europe Trophy.
Yes,
because the winners of the Rugby Europe Trophy will play against Germany for promotion. Now there is another week of games that will be played. Well, actually, there's two more weeks of games. One will be played next week, and then one will be played mid-April. I'm not quite sure why that is. But right now, who's at top of the table?
Please be Portugal.
No.
Oh, who else is there? Portugal. I do notice.
Holland?
Holland are top of the table.
Amsterdam.
They've won 4 out of 5. And they have the top try scorer, who is a name you might recognise.
Visser's brother.
Sepp Visser is, wow, has scored 8 in the competition. Now they
have
are,
that, stalkers.
They are only top because Portugal have only played 4 games. Portugal play against Poland next week. Portugal have played 4, won 4. And Portugal, by the look of this, unless there are some Dutch referees, Portugal will beat Poland next weekend to win that win the Grand Slam effectively and go through to play Germany.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm willing Portugal to get promoted, so we've got an option of
Portugal go even more south.
Yeah. Do the Canary Islands have a rugby team?
Probably. talking to Portugal, I think me and Phil are going to Lisbon Thames.
Yes.
We've not mentioned this because we don't know if we're going to do it yet, but it looks like during the finals weekend we're all going to go to Lisbon Thames. I don't know what we're doing. You'd come, Tim, but you're probably working, are you not?
I'll be at Twickenham.
Yeah. So we might be hosting a tent there of some sort, watching the Thames.
Which will be very, very good fun.
Yeah, watching Thames and then turning our attention to the finals and ignoring the Thames. But we are going to Lisbon Thames.
Question, are you going to take your boots?
Absolutely. Have boots, will travel. I will play any time, any place.
So if there are some teams going there, I might take my boots. I'll see how I'm feeling.
Oh, go on. We'll rekindle our sense of partnership.
But if you want a body wreck who won't look ridiculous in a skin-tight shirt, Phil's your man.
Yeah, if you want a non-body wreck who does look ridiculous in a skin-tight shirt, I'm your man.
Just one thing. Alex Lowe from The Times, excellent rugby writer, their deputy rugby correspondent, has just posted... Well, a picture has been posted of tomorrow morning's Times newspaper back page where it says... Eddie Jones is ready to gamble by resting Lions. Eddie Jones is prepared to leave his British and Irish Lions at home this summer, despite being warned that England must beat South Africa or forget about winning the World Cup.
Downfall part two, 3-0 South Africa.
Downfall part, yeah.
I think he would be right to rest his Lions.
And by the way, South Africa, no jokes. They are basically getting rid of all of their criteria for selection.
Yeah.
It was 30 caps thing. I think that's going to go completely. A reinforced Springboks with everyone available. My God. Watch out.
So that's 16 players went on the Lions tour from England. So downfall part two could well be happening.
Can I should I scrub downfall off that now?
Well, you can strike through, finish third in the Six Nations because you got that wrong.
Incorrect, I guess. Well, you know. Win some, lose some.
But yeah.
You haven't been... A lot of people have commented. They thought you would be smugger.
I'm magnanimous. If nothing else...
You're never magnanimous.
If nothing else, I am humble.
So humble.
Oh, the most humble rugby tweet I've ever seen. In fact, I'm not going to go into it now. I don't want to give the guy the popularity because he's dreadful. But yeah, look on my Twitter, you'll see it. right, let's do some predictions.
Yes. So we're back to Avicii Premiership Pro 14 next weekend.
Yeah, let me get them up. So, Pro 14, we have Friday 23rd of March. We've got Connacht hosting Edinburgh. Edinburgh, who are doing some nice things at the moment.
Yeah, well, they fourth in the table, something.
Maybe fourth in the overall table.
No, fourth in the conference.
Are they not third in their conference?
I will check for you now, Phil, but I'm pretty sure they are. Because everyone's getting excited about them being fourth, but that's actually literally, you know, not very good.
Yeah, it's not great, is it?
Yeah. No, the third. You are right, the third.
Yeah. So it looks like they would be going through to play against Munster if it stayed exactly as it was in the knockout round. At Munster, who they just beat. So Connacht hosted Edinburgh. Home win?
Yes. I would say so.
Connacht, who have been disappointing this year. Yeah, Connacht have won 6 out of 17. Edinburgh have won 12 out of 17.
Yeah.
Only one behind Leinster and only one behind Glasgow.
Yeah, it's not bad, actually.
It's very good.
I'm going to go Connacht at home because they're building up to next weekend, which is their home match in the Challenge Cup.
okay.
Challenge Cup quarterfinal.
Then Glasgow host Zebra.
Glasgow.
Glasgow. And Dragons host Cheetahs.
Cheetahs. Even at Dragons, it's going to be Cheetahs.
Yeah.
Poor.
Then on Saturday, we have four games. So JB's beloved Benetton travel to the Southern Kings.
Yeah. Yes.
Big Benetton win.
You would hope so. Make it 9 wins for the season, which is bloody fantastic.
Which is remarkable.
They're not going to send their Italian players out there, though, are they?
Yeah, they will. They need to
straight
win
straight after the Italy match.
And providing Ulster lose, my beloved Benetton Battlefield's terrible Ulster.
The Italian players won't travel because they'll be flying out like today.
So I'll go for the Kings.
No, I think Benetton will still win because they've been winning even without.
Yeah, no, you're right actually.
Benetton to win.
Oh, but we won't overtake
Blues
Ulster,
or Ulster. Ulster.
Blues have been winning recently, and I don't like it. And make it one bit.
And Ulster are just...
Ulster.
I don't know what to say.
I'll go for Blues at home.
Ulster and Blues have won the same number of games. That's a disgrace.
And again, we've got an incredible matchup now, and there's going to be no international players in it. Munster v Scarlets.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a bit of a waste.
Munster to win at home. Although, maybe the Scarlets, because Scarlets can still play that attractive brand of rugby, no matter who they've got in there.
Yeah, that's true.
They love their wider Wales players that haven't been involved in the side, like James Davis and things like that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Give me Scarlets away from home.
Yeah, I'll go Scarlets away from home.
All right, Premiership?
Well, then final game, Ospreys.
I know, because they've both got a European Cup game following weekend, so they'll all be resting all their big games.
And then Ospreys, Leinster will be exactly the same. Leinster to win.
Leinster.
Yeah.
Because Leinster have got a quality 50-man squad.
Have that, Ospreys.
Then.
Avicii.
Avicii. Friday night. Are you working any games this weekend, Tim?
Friday and Saturday.
Oh, which one?
Friday is good.
You're doing Saturday?
The Twickenham Stadium. London Stadium match. Is it Quins v Saracens v Quins?
What are the ticket sales like for that? Do you know?
I don't know.
Well, so Friday night we've got Bath Exeter.
Oh, Exeter.
Should have been
the Anglo-Welsh Cup final. I was really excited about that game.
Will they just double up on that?
I imagine they won't.
No, I think they might not.
Because it would mean...
No, not like amateur teams do.
Because it would mean Bath having home advantage for the final.
Yep.
Or Exeter... Or Bath relinquishing their home advantage for the league game. So either they get home advantage for the final or they give up a home league fixture.
I see.
And it gets played at Gloucester. Or it was Gloucester, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was really looking forward to that.
No doubling up, sad.
So it's unlikely. I'm not saying it's definitely not going to. I would be astonished.
I mean, I've done it at Broughton Park before.
Yeah. Did you give up home advantage or did you?
No, we just said, look, we can't fulfil our fixtures. Can we combine our league and our cup?
The good thing about this is neither Bath or Exeter are in the European final stages, so there are free weekends to play the game.
That's true.
Yeah. So Exeter, next. Come on, don't be crazy.
Exeter.
Yeah.
Will they?
Exeter.
Yeah.
Exeter. Give me Exeter.
Saturday.
So we got London Irish Gloucester.
Yep.
That will go...
Gloucester's way.
Yep.
I'm just going to say Irish.
Gloucester, I think.
I think Gloucester. Then Sale Worcester.
Boom. Sale at home. Cheers.
5-pointer for Sale.
Why did you say Gloucester... but then when it was the other game, you went, boom, yes, Sale at home.
Because I know how this is going to go. I like to make accurate predictions.
Okay. Yeah, Sale will win at home.
I'd imagine so.
Then Newcastle-Northampton, which is the 5:30 kickoff.
Newcastle.
This is the one at St. James's Park.
Ah, nice.
I wonder how ticket sales are going for that.
Very reasonably well, I think.
Good.
Yeah. I think Newcastle, that'll be a good win.
So that game is on BT Sport, as is...
Saracens Harlequins. Which Saracens win.
Yeah.
Now, Saracens have got an interesting dilemma. I say interesting dilemma. There's no way they're going to play any of the England players who started.
Oh, I think they will. I mean, what,
in this game?
Yeah.
No, with the Champions Cup next weekend.
Oh, God, yeah.
Are you mental?
Well, am I mental? That's a good question.
Liam Williams? Do you flog him?
No.
No.
Well,
no way.
Great mates.
Sorry. Whose game is this?
Saracens
home game.
Oh, they've got to.
No.
They've got to. You know, you can't go around selling, you know, trying to sell out Wembley or whatever it is. Or is it the Olympic Stadium?
The Olympic Stadium.
Right, whichever it is. And not put out all your horses. You can't do it.
But you can't put out those boys who've played a full Six Nations and are playing Champions Cup away at Leinster next week.
I don't think they have an option.
They do. I would happily take the strongest possible team and the strongest possible team in best condition against Leinster than have some guys who are knackered.
I know what you'd rather do. If it was in the Alliance, I'd agree with you. But there's been such a push to sell tickets and make this into an occasion. If you don't put out your players, it's a bad look.
So do you think they will do?
Yes.
Or do you think they should do?
No, I think they will do. I don't think they should do. No, actually, I think they should do and they will do.
I don't think they will.
From a commercial point of view, certainly.
No.
No.
Well, let's see. Write it on my board.
Right on the board. So, Mako, Cruis, Itoji.
Cruis will definitely play.
Owen Farrell
has to play.
So, Cruis might do because he's not played.
Cruis and Wigglesworth.
Cruis, Wigglesworth, Jamie George might do because they've not started every game.
Yeah. Maybe Mako.
Mako, Itoji, Farrell. No way.
No chance. Probably not great mates because he's played every week.
Yeah, but he's on the wing, isn't he?
Yeah, great mates and Liam Williams.
It's the
key ones are those Farrell, Itoji, Mako.
I think Farrell.
There is no way those three should be playing.
No.
I think Farrell. I mean, Itoji's the one.
I'd send him away. I'd just say
send
go
him on
go
a spa
away.
Weekend.
Yeah, go away. A week on a beach.
Yeah. Go to Dubai.
Go and read a book.
Do you know what? A lot of lads have been to Dubai, though, haven't they? Because it's they get time off now.
Yeah. Loads of people have been to Dubai. Bit of winter sun. A few days rehab and relaxation. Mm. Just like we had in Madrid.
Just like that. I hope not.
And then...
That was a work trick, guys. Come on.
It was. We worked very, very hard. I tell you what, it was actually quite... There were times where I was getting quite stressed.
You were getting stressed, were you?
Well, just about the whole thing.
I could have literally thrown one of the members of staff down the stairs.
And we had 230, 40, 50 boys who'd been enjoying the Madrid hospitality for 3 days, who had watched some brilliant rugby and were ready for a live podcast. And if it didn't go well, it might have been difficult conversation.
Well, I'm not going to burn any bridges yet because we might need to go back there. Well, I mean, I hope I never have to go back there.
I don't think we're going to go back there if we can help it.
Well, let's not burn any bridges just yet, Tim.
Yeah. Yeah.
So who's saying Saracens? Who's saying Quins?
I am saying Saracens.
I am saying Saracens.
Yeah.
Saracens. I think it will be. It's a lot more of a coin toss.
It is, because I think it'll be a shell of a Saracens team.
Yeah.
Then, final game.
Big one.
The game that JB has been saying that George Ford will be playing, will not play in.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see, given that he was only on the bench this week.
And Leicester aren't in European action the following week.
Yeah. And it is effectively a derby match at home. Leicester Wasps.
Yeah, I have a feeling I'm going to be wrong on this. I have a feeling because I was doing some chatting today. And, you know, maybe I rate them a little bit more highly than, you know, others at 10. I still think they should do that because
they've been winning.
Run of three games. Samua's been pulling the strings. I don't think I'd change it, but we'll see.
And prediction for this game?
I would say Wasps by 7.
How many players...
At Welford Road, I'm going to say Leicester.
Yeah. I'm going to say Leicester as well. How many players do these two teams lose? Did they lose this weekend?
Well, Wasps...
Cole. So Leicester have got Cole, Ford, May, and that's it.
Yeah, Wasps, Launch, and Haskell.
Haskell and Launchbury.
Daly.
Haskell, Launchbury, Daly. But they haven't had Daly for ages.
And
so.
Hughes
obviously... Yeah, Hughes out. But in the same way that Ben Young's is out... So it's kind of 3-4 apiece.
But Wasps still have Thomas Young. Ridiculous when you look at the sevens that Wales have. England are going, we don't really have a seven, an out-and-out seven. Wales have got more than they need.
Who would you give? Who would you give to have Navidi?
For me, Navidi's...
Take Haskell, you love him. I'd take Haskell. Go on, Jay. You'd love that.
We've got Buckrowers, but I wouldn't... I've got a thought about Haskell. It's pretty crazy, actually. Who would I? I think Wales would quite like to have Launchbury for Navidi.
I think they'd take a prop, another backup prop.
Yeah,
I think everyone would take a prop. Actually,
that's not a bad shot.
But like who? Dan Cole? No. Sinks? No.
Harry Williams? He's better than Thomas Francis.
Maybe Harry Williams. That'll work.
It'd be an upgrade from club level to international level.
Am I insane? Yeah. Do you think that Hartley can continue as England captain? Do you think he will?
I wouldn't.
If he steps down, who would be captain?
It's a difficult one.
Don Armand. No, not really. I'd like Farrell.
I do, but the it's given him too much. Being... Your playmaker, your kicker, and your captain is too much.
Yeah, I don't know. He strikes me as that kind of bloke, though. Like he's practically a captain without being officially the captain, anyway.
But he's very introverted. Oh, in
fact, he is. Yeah, he's not talking.
That's true. Well, so was Martin Johnson.
That's fair. I don't think he's introverted within the squad, though.
No, just when Haskell's got his phone out on record.
Interestingly, you mentioned Haskell. If they go to South Africa and Hartley's not the captain, I could see Haskell doing the job.
So I think Hartley will go because he wasn't a Lion.
Yeah.
So I think he will go and they'll need some leadership if you take the majority of the rest of the leaders out. it's then the autumn internationals,
hasn't been bad. Like when you actually look at England players who've not performed, I wouldn't put him near the top.
It's so his line out is good. Scrum's been okay. He offers nothing. It's nothing other than that.
Yeah, I can see Haskell captaining the tour to South Africa. I really can.
Put it on the board.
Not yet.
But I don't know who's, because I don't see a ready-made captain other than
Haskell. I mean, genuinely, Haskell.
I don't think he will start if everyone's fit.
Yeah, but not everyone's going.
Because I think, Underhill and Simmons, I think, would start at seven if everyone was fit.
I think Simmons is done for the time being. Underhill,
it's done as an eight.
Well, Underhill's a seven. Yeah, Underhill is a seven. There's no two ways about that. Underhill is the boy. But he gets injured too easy.
He does. You're quite
right. He's good. Right, anyway, I think this is done.
Yeah, Leicester or Wasps?
Leicester at home.
Wasps.
Leicester at home.
Right, that's it.
Done. Yeah,
boom, we're done.
It's over.
Let me get out of here then.
Yeah, let's go. Have a cracking week and let the boys play.
Let the boys play and all that stuff.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.